antibiotic use. Log odds of symptoms in those who have antibiotic use is another way of writing that left-hand side. I'm going to subtract the log odds of this second group, which is the log odds of symptoms in the group that don't have antibiotics, okay? And then what do we have on the right-hand side of the equal sign? We're going to get rid of the beta naught, so we're left with beta 1, and then we have beta 2 times steroid use cancels out, so we're left with beta 3 times steroid use. Are you all with me so far? So what we have on the left-hand side is the log of an odds ratio. So in other words, it's the odds ratio that's looking at odds of symptoms in antibiotic versus non-antibiotic. What do you think? Should we keep proceeding on this? Yeah? So if you will, I'll write that as an odds ratio. A difference between two log odds is the log of the odds ratio. It's the odds ratio of symptoms, but I'm going to say that it's the odds ratio of symptoms and antibiotic use. But now we're writing that as a function, beta 1 plus beta 3 times symptoms. So beta 3 is now the coefficient for steroid therapy, right? Did I get us messed up here? Steroid therapy is now, we're looking at a log odds ratio, but what we would see if we wrote this for ST equals 1, then it would be the log odds ratio equals just beta 1. If ST plus beta 3, if ST is equal to 0, we're left with just beta 1. And if we subtract them, we're left with a difference between two log odds ratios. So let me pause here for a second and make sure everybody feels comfortable with this bottom line that says the log odds ratio of symptoms in those with antibiotic versus those without equals beta 1 plus beta 3 times symptoms. Because then I'll go to a next slide and we'll solve for when steroid therapy is 1 versus steroid therapy is 0. Is everybody okay with this? Yeah, so what I wanted to do was to say the difference between two odds, meaning the odds of symptoms for antibiotic use minus the odds of symptoms in those without antibiotics use, is actually now giving us the log odds ratio for symptoms by antibiotic use. So this isn't a minus. This is the association between symptoms and antibiotic use as a shorthand. If you don't like that, then we would just say that this is an odds ratio that's looking at symptoms by antibiotic use. And that is allowing us to still look at this as a function of steroid therapy. Okay, so if I take that same line that we just left with, and I'm going to say that the log of the odds ratio of symptoms by antibiotic therapy equals beta 1 plus beta 3 times steroid, then what can steroid take on? It can either be 1 or it could be 0. So when it's equal to 1, this model is written as the log of the odds ratio of symptoms by antibiotic use equals beta 1 plus beta 3. When steroid therapy is 0, this is the log of the odds ratio of symptoms by antibiotic use equals just beta 1. So now what do we get if we subtract beta 3? But what is beta 3? It's a difference between two log odds ratios. But the first log odds ratio is the odds of symptoms in those with antibiotic use versus not among the subgroup who have steroid therapy. The second log odds ratio is the log odds of symptoms in those with antibiotic versus no antibiotic therapy among those who have no steroid. And when would these two be the same? When there's no interaction between steroid therapy and antibiotics, the log odds ratio of symptoms by antibiotic use should be the same in those who have steroid therapy as in those who don't. And when that's when that difference is the same, beta 3 is equal to 0. When it's not the same, beta 3 is a difference between two log odds ratios, but a difference between two log odds ratios is the same as the a difference between two logs is the same as the log of their ratio. So we have two logs. It's just that the numerator then is going to be the odds ratio of the symptom antibiotic association among those with steroid therapy. The denominator will be the odds ratio for the symptom antibiotic relationship among those without steroid therapy. So it's a log of the ratio of two odds ratios. But if there's no interaction, those two odds ratios have to be the same. And if that's the case, then this will equal 1. The log of 1 would equal 0. Otherwise, if there is a difference in these two odds ratios, suppose that the odds ratio in one group is 3 and the odds ratio in the other group is 1. Maybe I should use a different number like 2. Then what would this tell us about the odds in one group compared to the odds in the other? It would tell you that one is 3 times that of the other, and if we exponentiated beta 3, that would tell us that 3 over 2 or 1.5 is the factor by which the odds is greater in the group that are taking steroid therapy compared to the group that isn't. Is that clear with everybody? We're going to revisit this again, this term. We'll revisit the, you know, interpretation of interaction terms in logistic regression. But the point, the bottom line, is that in that original model, log odds equals beta naught plus beta 1 antibiotic plus beta 2 steroid plus beta 3 times an interaction term, beta 1 and beta 2, how are they interpreted? They're log odds ratios. But beta 3, because it is an interaction term, is going to be a log of a ratio of odds ratios. So if we go back to the question where it said, how do we interpret this this coefficient? It's going to be a log of a ratio of odds ratios. So we can go through and we can say, do any of these sound like what we just tried to convince ourselves of, right? And if we still have to convince ourselves some more in this term, that's okay, because it is a difficult concept. But we could first say, can we rule these out? Is the interaction coefficient the difference in log odds of symptoms between patients treated with or without antibiotics? What would that be? That would have been beta 1 without an interaction term in the model. What's the difference in the log odds of symptoms between patients treated with or without steroids? That would have been beta 2 if we did not have the interaction term in the model, right? So A and B we'd rule out. C, the difference between patients treated with and without steroids in the log odds ratio of symptoms for patients treated with and without antibiotics. That's what we just did. Right? We just set it up that way. So I would say if it's still seeming fuzzy, write it out again to convince yourself. But we were just saying this is the difference in the log odds ratio of symptoms by antibiotic use in those who are treated with steroids versus those who aren't. And that's why the answer for D, for 10, would have been C. And then D and E, D is the log odds ratio of symptoms for patients treated with both antibiotics and steroids. We don't have that in the model. The log odds of symptoms for patients treated with both antibiotics and steroids, It's not, we're not setting up a model that gives us those interpretations. So I would say write out the model and review it again. But it really is, in order to make sense of this, I would say start with basics. You start with the model. You have two dichotomous covariates that are included in that interaction term. Indicate first, what is it, what is this, how does this model look if you're looking at antibiotics equals 1 and antibiotics equals 0, so that you can subtract those to get a log odds ratio that's written as a function of steroid therapy, and then solve for steroid therapy to allow you to see that beta 3 by itself is a difference between two log odds ratios, which is the same as the log of the ratio of the odds ratios. Lyra? Yes. So if beta 3 is equal to 0, then what happens is we no longer have the interaction term in this model. So that says if you fix steroid therapy, then beta 1 is the log odds ratio of symptoms in those with antibiotics versus without. But it will be the same in fixing steroid therapy. It's the same in those with steroid therapy as it is in those without steroid therapy. Additionally, if you interpreted beta 2, you'd say if you fixed antibiotic use, then the log odds ratio of symptoms in those with steroid therapy compared to those without is the same in those with antibiotic therapy as it is in those without. So remember how when we've had continuous outcomes, we've looked at this parallelism. Here what we would be looking at is looking at having proportions that are the same, right? So the ratio of the proportions is the same. Whereas when we have an interaction, so meaning looking at 0-1s and then 0-1s in the other group, those relationships aren't the same. So more soon, we'll revisit logistic regression with interaction terms in a few weeks. But I would say go back and just review this. We did cover this in the notes, but it is a tricky concept. But it makes it a lot simpler if you can get rid of that interaction term, because it's basically saying in English, if the interaction term is equal to 0, then the numerator, which is looking at the odds of the outcome in one group versus the other, is the same in the by level of the other covariate. So this is saying the odds ratio of symptoms for antibiotic use versus not is the same in those with steroid therapy as it is without, if beta 3 is equal to 0.
So this is an ANCOVA with logistic regression.
It is. It's, you know, so that's right. So, you know, usually the term ANCOVA is more so reserved for putting an interaction term into a linear regression model, but a logistic regression with an interaction term is interpreted in the same way. Okay, so we did 10. Now we're on to 11. So from the results of Model E, it can be concluded what? So let's look at Model E. So Model E is setting up these treatment groups in a different way. So remember what we have. Let's just recall, because it's been quite a long time ago since we set this up. But if you look back at the setup here, so this was right at the preface with questions 5 through 11. What were these investigators trying to do? They had a control group that had, you know, neither antibiotic or steroid. They had their last group had both. And what about groups 2 and 3? 2 had antibiotic therapy, but the steroid was a placebo. And 3 had antibiotic placebo, but they had active steroid therapy. So they had these four different treatment groups. So what model, this next model is trying to do, Model E, is actually, you can see by the code, is that it has for the four treatment groups, it is setting up the four groups, meaning If both antibiotic and steroid were zero, this is the control group, then one or the other for treatment groups two and three. And then what do you notice about treatment group four? It's both active therapies. So this is now a categorical variable, and I could again label, you know, neither. What's group two? Group two is antibiotic is one, so this is only antibiotic therapy. The next one is only steroid, and the last one is both. So that's important that we have these set up, because then when we run the GLM model, we say, what's our outcome? The outcome is symptom. It's family binomial because it's dichotomous. And then you see I dot treatment group. So this is Stata automatically setting up the indicator variables for you. It tells you that the first group is omitted, so that means that that's your reference group. And then it gives you the coefficients for each of the three dummy variables that are set up. So basically, it's the model you see at the top here, log odds equals beta naught plus beta 1 treatment 2 plus beta 2 treatment 3 plus beta 3 treatment 4. But we know that the way these are set up is we have treatment 2, treatment 3, and treatment 4, and they're going to be all 0 for the reference group. Treatment 1 will be 1 for the second group. Treatment 3 will be 1 for the third group. And treatment 4 will be the only one that's 1 when we're looking at both therapies. Right? So Stata's doing that behind the scenes for us. Okay, so after all of that, let's just interpret this. So if I looked at these coefficients and their z-statistics and their p-values, I see right away that I have two non-significant p-values that say that actually group 3 is no different than the control group, the reference group. Group 4 is no different. But if I compared group 2 to the reference group, this is statistically significant, which is saying that the you'd have to exponentiate to interpret it. So do you want to exponentiate it to get the odds ratio? So we take e to the b1, which is e to the negative 0.896. This would give us the odds ratio of symptoms in group 2 compared to group 1. Anybody have their calculator? Everybody got 0.41? So, and that makes sense that it's reduced. That's a negative coefficient. So this would say that the odds of symptoms in the group treated by only antibiotics is reduced compared to the odds of symptoms in the group that have neither treatment. And it's reduced by how much? Roughly 59%. It's statistically significant. We could exponentiate the confidence interval as well. Okay, so after all that, just by looking at the model, we've seen no statistically significant differences except comparing group 2 to group 1, which is the reference group. So group 2 was only antibiotic versus neither. So let's see if something looks like this. Number 11, from the model's, results of Model E, it can be concluded that the difference in the odds of symptoms between the second and first treatment group is negative 0.9. Difference in the odds of symptoms. Do we ever talk about difference in odds of symptoms? So let's say, we're not so sure about that, right? Because we talk about differences in log odds, but not at differences in odds. So how about the mean number of symptoms decreases by 0.9 points? No means when we're dealing with odds ratios. The odds of antibiotic use decreases by 0.9 points per unit. Well, we're not talking about the outcome of antibiotic use. We're talking about the outcome of symptoms. So this makes no sense. D, the log odds ratio of symptoms for patients treated with both antibiotic therapy plus steroid therapy as compared to the control group is 0.4. with a 95% confidence interval that does not overlap one. Well, the combined group is not statistically significant. Its odds ratio would be close to one, and the confidence interval would overlap one. So what we've just interpreted is E, the odds of symptoms are statistically significantly reduced by almost 60% in patients treated with antibiotic therapy plus the steroid placebo as compared to those in the control group with neither. So it's important to keep in mind this is active antibiotic therapy. Steroid is not active. It's a placebo. Kevin?
No.
So see, this was the setup, and it's a real example. So we're using a real example in which we have neither group is active, right? They're both placebo, antibiotic therapy, and steroid. Antibiotic placebo and steroid placebo is the first group. The second group is antibiotic therapy plus steroid placebo. Meaning antibiotic therapy is the only active one. Yeah. So that's why our conclusion in 11 is that our odds ratio that we would get by exponentiating e to the b1 was 0.41. This is suggesting a 60% reduction in symptoms in the group that has antibiotic therapy plus steroid placebo compared to the group that has both placebos, which is the control group. Control group is both placebos. So my money's going to go with E. Okay. So now we have another scenario. We're still talking about some antibiotics, but questions 12 through 17 concern potential implications of treatment antibiotics for weight gain. So weight gain is going to be a continuous variable, and we have BMI was collected before randomization to treatment and then 1 year after, and it's the change in BMI measured in kilograms per meter squared that's the outcome. The researcher's primary hypothesis is that persons treated with antibiotics gain more in BMI than persons not treated with antibiotics. And then we also have a secondary hypothesis that the effect of antibiotics on BMI gain increases with age. So we have two more models, models F and G. They're simple linear regressions of change in BMI on age, which is centered at 30, and it's stratified by treatment assignment. So let's look at F and G. Here's F. So the expected BMI change is beta naught plus beta 1, age minus 30, but it's in the subgroup of persons taking antibiotic. So if you remember when we looked at the 2x2 tables, there were 100 people taking antibiotic, whereas in model G, we're looking at the expected BMI change equals beta naught plus beta 1 times centered age in persons not taking antibiotic. And remember in the 2x2 table, we had 107 people not taking antibiotic. So we're looking at these two simple linear regressions, and then we're going to answer some questions. Should we take a look at this real quick? Is there a significant association between BMI change and age in those taking antibiotic? Borderline, right? But it's 0.045. Coefficient is positive. In those not taking antibiotic, coefficient is 0.165, highly statistically significant. And then we have some other things we can look at as well. But in 12, it says in model G, the model F statistic is 7.84 with an associated p-value of 0.006. What do we conclude? So this is, if we look at model G and that F statistic is here, we'll just remind ourselves that this is testing a null hypothesis that none of the covariates are needed in the model, meaning beta 1, which is the coefficient for age, is 0. But since it's a simple linear regression, how else can we test it? We can test it with the hypothesis test for the coefficient beta 1 equals 0 here. We see those p-values are the same conclusion. So there is a statistically significant association between BMI change and age. So it was asking, what does that F test? It tests whether there's a change in BMI associated with age. So let's go through each. A, the variance of 1 year change in BMI is not constant over the age range of participants. So that test doesn't test anything about variants. So in fact, if we had age groupings instead of continuous age, we could have used the Bartlett's test to test whether the variance of BMI change is the same in each of the age groups. But here age is continuous, so we don't have a test for it. But the F statistic, we said, is testing the hypothesis that beta 1 is 0. So mean one-year BMI change differs significantly with age among that subgroup of people not taking antibiotic. That's true. What's the matter with the other ones? Mean one-year change, BMI change, does not differ significantly with age among persons not taking antibiotic. So this is the key word. It does differ significantly. So this is false. D, there is a significant interaction between age and antibiotic. Well, we are not assessing it in that model, and the F test is just testing that the coefficient for age equals 0. And lastly, a person's one-year change in BMI can be predicted precisely from his age or her age. That's not what this F test is doing. Okay, so we would go with the association between BMI change and age. The next one, number 13, says, suppose the researchers wish to evaluate some of the assumptions of linearity, independence, normal distribution, equality, but they wanted to see whether the normality assumption held. So which of the methods best achieves this goal? So one way to test normality was to actually get the residuals. And remember, we were emphasizing looking at constructing a histogram of the residuals or error terms. And the histogram was something that, you know, we said should be looking fairly normal, centered around zero. So you probably look down these possible choices, and we don't see the word histogram. We don't see the word histogram, but what do we see? Exploring, you know, examining a stem and leaf plot of the model residuals or the model error terms. So we were looking for A because a stem and leaf on its side is a histogram. So we're looking at that. The next one said examining a stem and leaf plot of model predicted values. We're not assuming that the predicted values are normally distributed. So that would not be appropriate. Examining a stem and leaf plot of age. Age is the covariate. We're not making any assumption about its normal distribution. And then evaluating a residual versus age scatter plot for a curvilinear pattern, what does that allow us to assess? Linearity, right? Linearity. This is asking about the assumption of normality, not linearity. So some of these could be correct answers to a different question, but not this one. And then the other one also says, look at a residual versus predicted value plot for curvilinear. So again, this would be looking at testing the assumption of linearity, not normality. So the only one that's appropriate is the stem and leaf of the residuals, which is the same as looking at a histogram of residuals. Not meant to be tricky, but a histogram and a stem and leaf are the same thing. Okay, 14. So now we're asking, use model G to estimate the correlation coefficient. So we say, what's the correlation coefficient? It's R between one-year BMI change and age in persons not taking antibiotic. Which of the following is the best estimate? So since this is a simple linear regression, from the simple linear regression we have R squared. In a simple linear regression, R is going to be the square root of R squared. So this should be the square root of 0.0695, and that should be 0.2636. So R squared has properties that it's always going to be greater than or equal to 0. R, on the other hand, is bounded between negative 1 and positive 1. You'll notice that there aren't any negatives here, but how do I know that the square root of 0.0695 is going to be positive 0.263. Sarah? Because the age coefficient, the slope, is positive. That's right. So if these had been mixed up with negatives and positives, we would have gone with the positive one. Okay, 15. So 15 says, use models F and or G to estimate the age coefficient in a multiple linear regression that's looking at this outcome of change in BMI on age and antibiotic use using the investigator's data. So it's really saying we would have had a model of the BMI change as a function beta naught plus beta 1 times the centered, was it centered age? Sorry, 30 minus 30 plus beta 2 times antibiotic use. And it's saying if we just did a regular old multiple linear regression, no interaction term, then let's go back and look at model F. I might have it here. No, I have it before. So model F, we saw that the slope that looked at the Y versus age relationship, so BMI change versus age relationship, was a positive 0.132. What is it for the group not taking antibiotics? Positive 0.165. So if I thought about this in terms of a picture, 0.135, 0.165 is just a little bit, not much, just a little bit steeper. So antibiotic use equals 1, antibiotic use equals 0. So if I had one slope that was 0.1, will you remind me what it was? 0.135? 0.1? Thank you, 132, so that's the slope here. What's the slope for the group not having antibiotics? 0.165. What are we forcing to be true when we're looking at a multiple linear regression? We're forcing that relationship between change in BMI and age to be the same. So basically, it's a weighted average of the strata, right? We're forcing it. Think of all those problem sets you did that said, let's stratify by height, right? We're forcing it. So what's going to be a good estimate of what that common slope will be? So a weighted average has to be something that's going to be between 0.132 and 0.165. We don't know exactly what it's going to be without running the model. Are you with me? I'll say it one more time, just to make sure that you agree with me, that if I just run a model without an interaction term, the relationship between BMI change and age is going to be the same for those who use antibiotics and those who don't. We force it to be the same. The model forces those lines to be parallel. So if we've done the two separate simple linear regressions and we see that one slope is about 0.13 and the other one is about 0.16, if you ran the multiple linear regression, what would you expect the slope to be in the multiple linear regression? What would you expect the estimated age coefficient to be in that regression? So let's go through them. Would you expect it to be 0.17, meaning, you know, about the same as those in those who don't use antibiotics? Okay, so the logic is this. Here's the logic. So the logic is that we could have two, so let's just bring in a blank slide here. Okay, so we could have a simple linear regression, and we actually have this. So the outcome is BMI change, and then we have X was equal to age. And we saw that we looked in this group in which there's antibiotic use, right? Antibiotic therapy use equals 1. Then we saw that this slope that's looking at the change in BMI change with age, that slope, that B1, was 0.13, I think it was 2, or what was it, 0.132. Then we saw in that next model that if you looked at BMI change, regressed onto age, but again, this is a subgroup, and what was the subgroup? the antibiotic use was zero. They don't use antibiotics. Then we saw this slope was actually about 0.165. And you'd say that actually they're not too different. If they're not too different, we're not expecting an interaction between age and antibiotic use. And if we're not expecting an interaction, then when we run the, so I'm just going to erase this and say, if we run a multiple linear regression, we would say now what we're doing is actually stratifying by the two groups. So we have the antibiotic group, and we also have the no antibiotic group. And we may have run the simple linear regressions, and they looked a little bit different. But in a multiple linear regression, we have no interaction terms. So what are we forcing those slopes to be? This parallel, that they're the same. So the notion is that if you have information from the two separate simple linear regressions, when we run the multiple one where we're forcing these to be parallel, then that slope is going, that reflects the relationship between the outcome, BMI change, and age, is going to be the same in the antibiotic use group as it is in the non-antibiotic use group, because we've not put in an interaction term. So then the thought process is, if in the subgroup with antibiotic use the slope is 0.132, and in the subgroup where there's no antibiotic use the slope is 0.165, the weighted average that we get through the multiple linear regression is somewhere in between those two. That's the logic. So it's not going to be less than 0.132. It's not going to be, you know, 1.65 or more. It'll be somewhere in between the two. So then we go back and say, what do we have? We have 0.17. So this is too high because that's really a little above the estimate in one group. We have 0.13, but that's too low because it's the estimate in only one of the groups, right, about 0.1. We have 0.03. That's just off, right? That's just off because the individual subgroups are much greater than, their slopes are much greater than 0.03. And then we're left with 0.3. So what's the matter with 0.3? It's too high. And what about 0.15? It's just right, right? So it's, this is not accurate because we haven't run the multiple linear regression, but our thought process is that if you take two groups and you're taking an average, it's a weighted average, but an average of those two, you're going to get somewhere in between 0.13 and 0.165, and the only option you have here, which is that way, is 0.15. Does that make sense?
So whenever you're going from multiple single linear regressions to a multiple linear regression concerning those variables run in the single linear regression, you're always going to take a weighted average?
Well, Stata, what it is being computed as those coefficients is a weighted average. So I'll play devil's advocate a bit, and I'll say, remember, if we looked originally at our models F and G, you know, I'm eyeballing 0.13. This is in terms of change in kilograms per meter squared per year of age. That's not too different, even eyeballing it, from 0.165. If you had really different coefficients in these simple linear regressions, it might lead you to, you know, expect an interaction between age and antibiotic use. So the thought process there is that we're going to get, you know, the multiple linear regression gives you a weighted average. The only reasonable one is in between the two individual slopes. So the weighted average of those two slopes is about, it could be about 0.15. Okay, just a few more. We're still talking about models F and G. But, you know, I'm going to just leave you with 15 with this thought, that remember when you did the problem set that said, look at those 10 different height deciles, and you eyeballed them, and you were trying to say, well, you know, what do you think? Do they look sort of similar? Remember when you said that? And they did. So then you felt comfortable in terms of interpreting the multiple linear regression coefficient as being the change in Y per unit change in X, you know, fixing or stratifying or controlling for X2. And that's what we're doing. If we thought it's if it was not a parallel relationship, then we should be introducing the interaction term so we can account for a possible very different relationship by strata. So 16 says, look back at F and G. Do 30-year-olds treated with antibiotic appear to gain more in BMI than 30-year-olds not treated by antibiotics over that 1 year period? So the key word here, the key adjective is, who are we looking at? Who are we looking at?
The median.
We're looking at those 30-year-olds. Yeah, the subgroup that we're centering on. So if we're looking at 30-year-olds, we're going to go back to the model and say, if we look among 30-year-olds, what are we left with? So beta 1 actually cancels out. We're left with beta naught, right? So when we have 30-year-olds, this reduces to 0. And we would say that among 30-year-olds in model F, those are persons taking antibiotic, the average BMI change is the intercept. And that intercept is 1.64 kilograms per meter squared. Awa? Oh, over the subsequent year refers back to our definition of the outcome. So our definition of change in BMI is, what was the BMI at 1 year of follow-up compared to what it had been at baseline?
Because I'm thinking the age will change. If it was 30 at that
time. This is baseline age. This is baseline age. So we're not using this. We're using this as a fixed covariate. It's not a repeated measures or, you know, longitudinal study in which we're looking at age changing. We're saying among individuals who were 30 at the time they started the study.
Because I read it as a sentence, and then it sounded like they were saying with an increase in age, like although we're starting at 30.
Yeah, it's not asking. So we'll be very clear that if we read this, it's not talking about an increase in age. It's talking about having 30-year-olds who are treated with antibiotics and whether they gain more in BMI over the subsequent year. So it happened to be separated by the comparison with the 30-year-olds who weren't treated with antibiotics, but what we're referring to is the gain in BMI from baseline over that subsequent year, which is the definition of the outcome. So back to model F. So if I convinced you that if we're looking among 30-year-olds, then in this model, what is of interest is the intercept. So the average weight gain or BMI change is 1.636 in those taking antibiotics. For the 30-year-olds who aren't taking antibiotics, what's the average weight BMI change? 1.67. So let's look at that. Similar or different? 0.04 difference. So what's the question again? So the question is saying, do 30-year-olds treated with antibiotic appear to gain more or not? So this is not a statistical test because we haven't seen the results of a statistical test. This is the eyeball. So 0.04 kilograms per meter squared is pretty small. So I would say my answer is going to be they're not really different. So if we go through each of the responses, the answer for A, no, the age coefficients for those only modestly different. Age coefficient is what is the change in average BMI change between those who differ by 1 year of age. So we're not looking at the coefficient for age. We're looking at the intercept terms. We see that those differ only modestly, and that if we inspected their confidence intervals from those two models, here they are, confidence interval from 0.95 to 2.32, confidence interval from 1.05 to 2.29, those have substantial overlap in the confidence intervals, so no statistical difference, so I would go with B. What's the matter with C? This one says a confidence interval for the age coefficient among those taking antibiotics includes only positive values. Well, what kind of question does that answer? It answers a question, but it says among those taking antibiotics, the change in the average BMI change over time with age is positive, so it would be statistically significant, not overlapping zero. Nothing to do with the question that we're asking. The other one is among those, so this one says a confidence interval for the intercept among those taking antibiotics contains only positive. So this doesn't allow a comparison between those taking antibiotics versus not. So this doesn't answer the question. And then no, age explains a greater proportion of the variance for those not taking antibiotic than it does for taking antibiotic. Does this response about age answer this question about 30-year-olds? No.
I'm sorry, can I ask that question again?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so we'll dissect this question, and the dissection of this question says we have two groups that we're comparing, the 30-year-olds treated with antibiotics, and then the 30-year-olds not treated with antibiotics. What we're comparing them with respect to is the gaining of BMI over the subsequent year. So again, I will say, what's the outcome? The outcome we defined as BMI change took BMI at 1 year, minus BMI at baseline. And so it's this delta, this change, that is the outcome for each individual. So for each individual in this study. And this is asking, is this BMI change, is it different in the 30-year-olds who are treated with antibiotic therapy versus those who are not treated by antibiotic therapy? Outcome is how much does BMI change over a year? Right. I would like everybody to understand. So let's go back to model. Let's just look at model F. So I'm going to take away the stuff that we had here. Okay. Here's a clear model F. Oops, sorry. Hopefully. Here's model F coming back. Model F says the expected BMI change. So what this BMI change is exactly what I just talked about. BMICH is the name of the variable that takes BMI at 1 year for each person, and it takes the difference for BMI at the start of the study at baseline. So if my BMI was 25 at baseline but 28 at the end of the study, I'd have a change of 3 kilograms per meter squared. So it says the average change in BMI as a function of age centered at 30. So when we look at BMI change as the Y variable and age here, we are centered at 30. So we know that the age coefficient is this slope, and that slope is the B1, but what is this value? So the intercept is going to be the average BMI or the expected BMI change for 30-year-olds. So that's what this constant is. And the average BMI change for 30-year-olds who are taking antibiotics is 1.64. Here's its confidence interval. Whereas what is it for the group that's not taking antibiotics? It's 1.67 with a confidence interval of 1.05. And that's what we're looking at. Okay, so I think we're on 17. So 17 says, suppose the researchers wish to formally test the secondary hypothesis that the effect of antibiotic on BMI gain, that's BMI change, or gain, increases with age, so that it increases with age. So, first of all, this is This is saying if we have our Y variable of BMI change on the Y-axis and age on the X-axis, and if we expect the effect, so that's saying that there's a bigger weight change. Remember that secondary hypothesis was a bigger weight gain among those who take antibiotic than those who don't. And if I am anticipating that that difference between weight gain in antibiotic versus not increases with age, I'd expect these two curves to separate. There's a bigger effect for older ages than at younger ages. Whereas if there was no interaction term, we would see the same effect across any age, right? So if they wanted to investigate this, it couldn't be a multiple linear regression because that says the difference in average weight gain between those with antibiotics versus not is constant by age. You with me? Let's say it again then. Okay. So let's go back to that secondary hypothesis just for a second. It says, a secondary hypothesis is that the effect of antibiotic on BMI gain. So effect of antibiotic means there's a difference in BMI gain between those treated with antibiotic versus those not. And so it's saying that that difference is going to increase with age as compared to remaining the same. So if we assumed it remained the same, then if I drew this just to have a visual to look at, I would expect that the change in BMI among those with antibiotics compared to those without antibiotics, what I'm doing with this curly cube bracket is saying that that difference is the same among 20-year-olds as it is among 40-year-olds as it is among 60-year-olds. And that would be implied in a multiple linear regression because we're forcing this to say, if you look among 20-year-olds, what's the effect of antibiotic on weight gain? It's the difference in the level of average weight gain for those treated by antibiotic minus those not. So this difference among 20-year-olds in a multiple linear regression is going to be the same as the difference or the treatment effect among 40-year-olds, as among 60-year-olds, as among 80-year-olds, right? That it doesn't change. So if the investigators really thought that this effect increased with age, then we would see these two non-parallel lines that would have to be indicated by an ANCOVA model with an interaction term. If you believe that that's what it's asking, it's saying the effect of antibiotic and BMI gain increases with age. So what I've tried to draw is that we see that the effect, meaning the difference in average weight gain between those treated by antibiotic and those who aren't, increases by age. Otherwise, the picture I've drawn on the left, what would you say? The effect of antibiotic on BMI gain, if this was a 2 kg/m² difference, it's 2 no matter what age. Isn't that right? It's 2 no matter what age. Whereas if you bring in an interaction term, you're able to see that that difference is increasing or becoming greater as age increases. So that was the intent of this, that if your hypothesis is that the treatment effect on the outcome increases with age as compared to remaining the same, then you would have to bring in an interaction term. So that means that you're going to have to bring in an ANCOVA, and we'd have to say which of these is correct. So if we have a t-test of the antibiotic coefficient in an ANCOVA, that's not going to help us. What we want to do is test the interaction coefficient. Because if the interaction coefficient is zero, it reduces to the regular multiple linear regression model that says the treatment effect is the same. So A is not correct. We want to look at the interaction coefficient. C says a t-test of the age coefficient in the ANCOVA model with antibiotic age and the interaction. So again, that's not going to help us assess whether this treatment effect varies. And then D, a t-test of the antibiotic coefficient in a regular multiple linear regression, doesn't allow us to visualize the difference in treatment effect. A t-test of the age coefficient in the multiple linear regression doesn't allow us to assess the difference in treatment effect.
I think writing this out into a model would help me the most because mm-hmm. it says increases by the level of another variable when mm-hmm. screens ANCOVA.
Right. So if I got rid of the ANCOVA model, I would say that, you know, this is just the multiple linear regression that says the expected, you know, outcome is beta naught plus beta 1 age plus beta 2 times antibiotic. And that would say no matter what age we're looking at, beta 2 is this treatment effect, right? No matter what age we're looking at. So the ANCOVA allows us to bring in beta 3, which is the age times the antibiotic, and that will allow us then to look at this differing relationship. Because if we quickly thought about this, we could say here's antibiotic equals 1 and antibiotic equals 0. If antibiotic is equal to 1, then how does this model reduce? If I just am paying attention to the age coefficient, this is a 1. Here's age. So beta 3 plus beta 1 will be this slope. Whereas when antibiotic is equal to 0, this cancels out, and all that we're left with is beta 1 as the slope. So beta 3 is what allows us to test that these are differing slopes, which means that the difference in average BMI in those with antibiotic versus those without is not going to be the same across ages. The way we've drawn this, it actually gets bigger, a bigger treatment effect as age increases.
So how would you
frequently tell someone in age, right? Yes. So, you know, if I wrote this model, the expected BMI change equals beta naught plus beta 1 age plus beta 2 antibiotic plus beta 3 age times antibiotic, then beta 1 by itself is going to say among those who don't use antibiotics, beta 1 is the difference in average BMI change associated with each 1 year increase in age. Beta 1 plus beta 3 is among the subgroup who use antibiotics, and that will be the change in average BMI associated with each 1 year increase in age. But it's in the subgroup of those who use antibiotics. Right. So if we had dichotomized age into, say, less than 30 and greater than 30, we would be looking at the means in each of these groups, and we would see that beta 3 would be the difference in average BMI change between antibiotic therapy and no antibiotic therapy for the older people versus younger people. Okay, so, you know, again, we'll continue. In fact, as early as tomorrow, look at ANCOVA models with linear regression and revisit it with interaction models with logistic by next week. We have three more questions. One's on sample size and then two other ones. So you only had one question on sample size on the exam. And it was trying to say, suppose you're planning another study and you have some key things here on number 18. If you estimate the variance in BMI change to be 10 kilograms per meter squared, so that means sigma squared is equal to 10, and it's the same in each group. So we're really assuming that in each of two groups, the variance is going to be the same value of 10. And you have equal sample sizes, so N1 equals N2 equals N, right? That's what I get from the equal sample sizes in each group. Then it says, how large must the sample be in the follow-up study in order to estimate a confidence interval of total width of 1 kilogram per meter squared? So that means the width is 1 kilogram per meter squared. What do we know about the confidence interval for a difference in means? The difference in means will be at the middle. If the width is 1, then what's the half width? The half width will be 0.5. So this is 0.5, this is 0.5, which is equal to 1. And all that it's asking us to do is tell us how large must the sample size be in order to estimate a confidence interval. So this says everything about precision, nothing about hypothesis testing. There's no beta, there's no power, there's no delta. It's the precision or the width of the confidence interval. Keyword, estimate. We're estimating a confidence interval. Total width is 1 kilogram per meter squared. So now we'd have to say, if we're looking at a confidence interval for a difference in means, what are we doing? We remember back, or we look at the formula sheet and say we take the difference in means plus or minus 1.96 times the standard error. But what's the standard error? Sigma 1 squared over N1 plus sigma 2 squared over N2. So I didn't need to memorize this. I could go back to the formula sheet. It is there in terms of knowing that this is the standard error. Yes, right? We know that this is the standard error. It's also what's used in the denominator of the hypothesis test. So this is the standard error of X1 bar minus X2 bar. So how do we use that? We'd say if this is the confidence interval that's centered at the difference in means, then what we're doing is we're setting half of the confidence interval, because it's plus or minus, we're setting 1.96 times the square root of, I'm not going to say sigma 1 squared, because what do we know about the sigma squareds? They're equal, so I can say sigma squared, and I can say over n, because we also know that the sample sizes are assumed to be equal. So I can say plus sigma squared over n. And what are we setting that equal to? 0.5, right? So half width of the confidence interval is 1.96 times square root of 2 sigma squared over n, and we're setting that equal to 0.5. Are you all with me on that? If we're specifying the width to be 1, and we put the point estimate, the difference in means, in the middle, then to form a confidence interval, we're taking plus or minus 1.96 times this. So half that interval is going to be gotten by adding 1.96 times the standard error of the difference in means. So I think we can keep going even a little bit further. So I'm going to just bring it up here to say we're setting 1.96 times 2 sigma squared over n equals 0.5. What do we know? We know that sigma squared is equal to 10. So we can write this as, and I also don't really like having the square root there, so we'll square. So can we write this as 1.96 squared times 2 times sigma squared is 10 over n, and we had to square both sides, so what will this be? 0.5 squared. Does that make sense? Going from this step to this step to then squaring both sides and substituting in our knowledge that sigma squared is 10. Thumbs up. So then let's just continue to solve because we're almost there. 1.96 squared is 3.84. 2 times 10 on a good day is 20. And divided by n would take 0.5 squared is 0.25. So now if I multiply both sides by n, the n's cancel out. But I also have to divide both sides by 0.25. So I'm going to be left with 3.84 times 20 divided by 0.25. 0.25 is actually 1/4. So I can do a little bit of eyeballing and say this is going to be about 80 times almost 4. And if we'd use our calculator, we would see that that's about 308 is equal to n. I just erased it, but what do we know about this assumption? We're assuming that the sample sizes in each group, where does it say that? Equal sample sizes in each group. So we've solved for one group, so we'd need 308 in each group. Yeah, so the answer was E. Okay, two more. 19. 19 and 20 are about the data shown in this table below. The authors performed a case control study in which they made 100 matches of cases who had symptoms with controls who have no symptoms. Keyword here, huge keyword. Huge matches. So this is... Keyword implies, you know, matches, we're matching one-to-one the case and control. So that means when we look at this table, it doesn't look like the table that we would see with cases and controls in columns. Rather, what we're seeing are cases with antibiotic use or not, controls with antibiotic use or not, but what we have here is 100 pairs, in which what we have in the cells are 7 cases and control pairs who both had antibiotic, 42 in which both had neither. So they're not providing any information in this data set. What we would want to do when we look at number 19 is to say in this matched pairs design, the best odds ratio takes 22 over 29, which is B is the number of pairs in which the case has antibiotic use, but the control doesn't. 29 is the number of pairs in which the control has antibiotic use, but the case does not. And that reduces to about 0.76. So that's the matched pairs odds ratio.
I think that this just got a little confusing with the way that it was set up, because I would have gotten the right answer had I flipped it. So... I got confused.
Oh, okay.
At the table by what is the cases that were antibiotic versus the controls that were antibiotic. Because I think the right B and C, except that flipped B and C.
Right, except if you flipped B and C, then what you were taking were the number of pairs in which the case was not exposed, but the control was,
right,
compared to the number of pairs in which the case was exposed, but the control wasn't. So what we were trying to do, we had an example that was using, you know, estrogen use, you know, yes or no. This one was antibiotic use, yes or no. So we're really looking at the odds of antibiotic therapy in cases versus control. So it was the specification of odds for antibiotic therapy, whereas if this had asked for the odds ratio for no antibiotic therapy, then you would have flipped and used 29 over 22. So by definition, B is going to be the number of cases with whatever you're looking at, which in this case was antibiotic therapy, but controls without. And C will be the number of pairs in which the cases are without the characteristic of interest, in this case antibiotic therapy, but the controls have it, have antibiotic therapy.
No, it makes a lot more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, so I can see, you know, you answered an appropriate question, but it would have been a different, it would have said odds ratio for no antibiotic therapy if you had gotten that. And then we have one last one, and this is 20. So 20 says, from the study design, what do you conclude about the association between symptoms and antibiotic treatment? So it was really critical to tune in both by the wording of the matched cases and controls, as well as in the setup of this table, that it was looking at pairs. But this means if we want to test that the odds ratio is equal to 1, McNamara's test would be the best. That rhymes. And so our null hypothesis is that the odds ratio equals 1. The McNamara's test statistic is given by 1 degree of freedom, B minus C squared over B plus C. There is a correction factor that you can see in other classes too, but we just emphasize the simplest one. So we would have had B, which was 22. C was 29. So 22 minus 29 squared over 22 plus 29. So now we have to say, is this really so simple we can do it in our heads? So 22 minus 29 is negative 7 squared over 22 plus 29 is 51. And this is negative 7 squared is 49 over 51. This is looking pretty close to 1. And it actually is 0.96, but I was just saying, could I do it in my head? And so if I did it in my head, it would be about 1. If you do it with your calculator, it's 0.96. So we're looking for that there's the p-value here would be much bigger than 0.05, right? Not statistically significant. Looks like our winner is A. There's no statistically significant association. McNamara's test statistic is 0.96. P-value much greater than 0.05. Okay. So that is it. I'm still here if you have some questions. I think everybody who wanted to talk about setting up the invariance of odds ratios in different directions has left. But if you have any other questions, otherwise I'll wish you a good night and walk safely or drive safely out there since I think it's near freezing. Okay, you're welcome. Good night.